Hi, my name is Janelle Engelstad, and welcome to the MAP Radio Hour, a Make Art with Purpose podcast. The MAP Radio Hour includes conversations with creatives, scientists, and other people addressing the intersection of cultural, political, and environmental concerns. You can find out more about MAP and our projects at makeartwithpurpose.net. My conversation with John Boylan, who works in the worlds of art and technology and coordinated the artist residency at Microsoft, begins with John sharing his thoughts stemming from a recent paper he wrote where he talks about British literary critic F.R. Leavis's critique of C.P. Snow, which leads to a discussion about the structure of artist residencies in tech and science. We then talk about 92, which John founded in Seattle in 2016.
I was looking for a quote from C.P. Snow about his famous Two Cultures lecture, talking about the difference between the For Snow, it was the literary versus scientific culture, the literary culture standing in for the arts. And for Snow, the literary culture was Luddite. It was backward thinking. And Snow saw this need to have a forward-thinking culture. So for Snow, it was the scientists winning out, that the literary establishment of England had to get on the program and become much more science-aware. F.R. Leavis tore into Snow and basically called him an idiot. And his quotes were even worse, not a genius. And his basic point was that Snow was nothing. Snow's original Two Cultures lecture was rambling and wandered and talked about the need for international development where you would train more scientists in the third world. Leavis was pretty much focused on the idea that you really had to have a clearer sense of your own language, have a clearer sense of your own ideas, and that would be what would bring the streams together, and that would be what would bring the sciences and the arts together. That was some of the gist of what he was saying.
And so how do you see that now influencing art, tech, and science collaborative projects?
Well, what happens with art, science, and tech projects is a couple things happen that really tend to go haywire. One is that the resident comes in, usually it's funny, I think that a scientist or technician or engineer resident at an art school or in an art museum is relatively rare, but could be fairly useful. Usually what happens is it's the artist or resident who is resident in a company or a research organization. And from what I've seen, what happens is the artist comes in, the artist has a handler, someone who plays host, person who got the funding for all this in the first place. And I believe that the first thing that happens is that the host says to the artist, well, take a look around. We'll introduce you to some people. We'll see what you're interested in, and then we can put together a project.
Right.
That's deadly, because it often produces a dead end. There's really no buy-in necessarily, for example, from the organization, and what it leads to is a project, and usually the residency is 2 or 3 months. So suddenly there's a project that has to be done. And then that becomes a deliverable with budgets, with priorities, with schedules. It's got to be done by March,
right,
before the residency is over. That's not the way art works. It's not the way good science works either in the end. And sometimes even good technology when you blow your deadlines. So what it forgets is the process. And in the end, the connection between art, science, and technology is all about process. It's all about what happens to the people.
Right. And it's about having space and room to adapt and change in that process and all of a sudden make a U-turn or a left turn or go up when you thought you were going down.
Right. So how do you institutionalize that? How do you bring that into residencies, into those interactions? That's one thing that needs to happen. One way to do it would be to have a situation where an artist comes into a corporation or a research outfit, and one of the first things that's understood is that there may be no artifact out of here, out of this whole thing.
Right.
If there is, it could be interesting, but if there isn't, the artifact is the process. And that can be documented, and it can produce more writing, it can produce other art.
But that, to me, is really in line with science anyway, because so much of science is... Science is a success even when it fails.
Right,
and
sure.
That's built into scientific experimentation, is we learn from failure and we move on to the next thing. And so it's interesting that that hasn't translated so much over into these collaborative projects.
Right, and maybe it has, but from what I've seen, it hasn't.
Right.
I mean, the work I've seen that comes out seems to be often stopgap because there just wasn't time and money for doing the thing the artist really wanted to do.
And do you think that there's a built-in bias towards the arts that supports that?
What do you mean bias towards the arts?
Well, I mean, I sometimes look at certain residencies or opportunities, and it feels like it's a neat thing to do.
Right.
But I just wonder how seriously some engineers and scientists take the artist who comes in, and do they see them as a peer?
Right. And so... The other thing I was suggesting in this paper was that, or one of the other things, was that if you do bring an artist or a group of artists into a corporate or research setting, what do you do first? The first thing you have to do is a meeting between everybody. Mm-hmm. Have them all sitting in a room together. The artist is not prioritized. The artist becomes part of the group. And the group then, the group discussion is, look, we have this artist here who's kind of a crazy thinker and a doer and a maker. What can we do? In theory, the artist is here to grow themselves, but is also here to help us grow. So are we all bought into the idea that we're going to grow with this artist here? Anybody have any objection to that?
Right.
If so, how and why? How do we deal with this sense that the artist may not be a valuable thing?
That takes me, this takes me back to NACFI, so the National Academies Keck Futures Initiative conference.
Yes.
And so I attended the 2016 conference, and it really was a structure that was purposely and intentionally designed to support collaboration and exchange between artists, scientists, engineers. And it did that. I mean, and I think one of the things that helped is we had pre-identified research problems or questions that we signed up for, so to speak, right?
Yeah.
So there were...
I heard about that.
Yeah, like 10 questions. Well, first of all, the theme was the deep blue sea.
Mm-hmm.
You applied and you talked about why you were working in this area and felt you needed to go to this conference. And then once you were accepted, you assigned yourself to a seed question in a seed group. And then you had tutorials that prepared you for when you got there.
Right.
And then you got there and you worked with your group, and it was an incredibly creative atmosphere where everything was supplied you could want, from Play-Doh to computer programs and everything in between, and food and everything. And then once you got going, over the subsequent days you could switch groups because everyone gave presentations, and you're like, well, wait a minute, I'm leaning over here this group has shifted over there. And so that seems like a really good model to actually import into artist residencies within these institutions. Is that the artist is coming in because this organization is specifically looking at questions that the artist is interested in, and their ideas and work and thinking supports that evolution of that question.
Right, right. It's
right?
true. Yeah.
And it's solution oriented.
Yeah.
And it doesn't mean that the solutions will come, but that there is an objective. And again, failure is seen as success.
Right.
So when you were at Microsoft, did you have any insight into this?
Yeah, I did. I mean, it was interesting to watch several of the residents and see how they were unable to do what they wanted to do. One of the problems you also have is that if an artist comes into a corporate residency, the people that they're supposed to work with may be busy.
Mm-hmm.
Suddenly there's another deliverable. Oh, help
right.
we've got to get this done. And
yeah.
what does that leave the artist?
And it adds stress to the people who are already there.
Right. Well, yeah, because suddenly this engineer who's supposed to work with the artist has other tasks.
Right.
And so there's that sense of a true collaboration. And also, it needs to be laid out what we're doing here.
Mm-hmm.
That's why I go back to that idea of getting a group together. There's also this sense that an artist may not see the scientist as an artist, but the scientist may want to be an artist. And so how does that work? That can cause interesting difficulties and possibilities. I mean, one of the things that's happened is the rise of hybrids. If you go into a lot of software companies and you scratch deeply, you'll find a lot of frustrated rock and roll guitarists.
Mm-hmm.
I think it's fairly simple that writing code has interesting overtones with music. It's about discrete little bits of data that are put together in interesting ways. But how does that translate, both in the way the code works and the way the music works? But we are finding a lot more people who make art and science together, or art and technology together. What we do with that, a lot of those people work in silos, and you don't see them. I mean, they'll go in, they'll work, and then they'll come home and they'll make culture.
Right.
So I think there are interesting possibilities. What you do with all of this is an interesting question.
Let's talk about 92.
Sure.
Your original idea at the 50th anniversary to produce an event inspired by the original Nine Evenings. And what is it about that original event? Is it just a convenient launching point? Because I don't think it is. I think it's more than that. I think there's a real passion and connection to that event that then inspires you to move forward with 92.
Well, the original event was when you read the histories of Bell Labs, it was this amazing place. When you look at the documentary footage about Nine Evenings, there was the sense that the scientists were in some ways overwhelmed by the artists or overwhelmed by what they had to do. There were a few people, it looks like there were a few people who got it.
Right.
But other people, they were just there to figure it out. Without being there, it's hard to say, but some of them got it, some of them just did the job. I think that all of them got that sense of, oh, this is cool,
mm-hmm.
We can do this, which is really valuable. Mm-hmm. And I think that they messed up a lot of it. I mean, a lot of it didn't work, or didn't work the first time, worked the second time, took a long time to get going.
My understanding of the history is some people felt they messed up, but other people saw it as, again, they really saw it as part of the process. That there
yeah.
was this, in that particular instance, there was an understanding as process can be, as a result.
Yeah, and I think it was both. There's an interview with Rauschenberg where he talks about how they had hired a regular PR firm to market the thing. And those people just marketed like you would market any other art event. So that they had all the people who would go to the opera coming to this event
and dress like they were going to the opera.
Right, right. And you see that. You see that.
Totally.
And you also see them sitting around trying to figure out why.
What the heck is this?
Why they're waiting an hour. This is really interesting. One of the things that Rauschenberg and Billy Kluver and the rest of them decided to do was to not explain anything. Mm-hmm. And it was work that really required some degree of explication for most people. It was minimalist. It was 60s happening. Why is it important that this person walks from here to there on the stage carrying this stuff? What's that about? And so the audience was not prepared for it. So I think that there was a lot of disconnect between the audience and some of the work. But then you see from the film, you see people, it was film, you see people engaged. One of the things that fascinated me was just that they did it, that there hadn't been that much back and forth between art and science. And then when you go back to Bell Labs, you see that it was a luxury. It was this idea that AT&T had so much money because they had the monopoly, that they were able to spend it on research and do all kinds of amazing research that didn't necessarily take them anywhere. The guy who wrote one of the books about Bell Labs called it the Innovation Factory. And he was looking at the difference between invention and innovation. And invention for him was you make something new. Innovation is then using it and bringing it out into the culture. And how do you do that with art and technology? How do you bring stuff out into the culture? And that was part of the 92 project, was actually having people play in different ways that might be a failure, but still was about play and was about using technology and science in ways that hadn't been expected, for which it hadn't been designed. I mean, when John Roche came in with that crazy DNA project, mm-hmm. DNA and glass project, if I were sitting back as a critic, whether I would have liked that project. But it was fascinating. And the question was it too much spectacle? People breaking glass, was that too much spectacle? I don't know. I mean, I really am cognizant of the danger of spectacle when you're dealing with art and science. Mm-hmm.
That's a really good point. And it was spectacle. I was in the front row.
Yeah, and it was.
Know? But there was also something joyous about it. And I don't see that as a problem.
No, I don't either.
And I know, because of who I was with in the audience, that spectacle allowed people who weren't your typical 92 audience to engage in a way that was, oh, wow, this is cool. What does this mean? Or why are they doing this? Or what's the purpose behind it? Let me look and see. And that spectacle drew them into that relationship with the performance and the work of art. And it might not have happened otherwise.
Right. It probably wouldn't have happened otherwise.
So you know.
So there you take a look at spectacle as a useful thing.
Yeah, yeah. And
for that piece,
it got Trump elected.
Yeah, right, exactly.
You know.
Yeah. Well, spectacle is often a dangerous thing.
Totally.
As with Trump. But for that spectacle, I think it was interesting because I don't know what the scientists thought about it. I think Roche and his people were thinking about their DNA. Was it about the DNA? Was it about the glass? Was it about the idea of breaking? There were so many things happening in that piece. So I think it was interesting spectacle. It was useful spectacle.
And it was your closing.
Yeah, it was the closing. And it worked out well,
yeah.
I thought.
So as a closing for 9 evenings of all kinds of investigations and performances and exhibitions, perhaps having that exclamation point was tribute that was worthy of the entire event.
Yes. Well, that's why we said this has to be the last night.
Yeah.
It was a little crazy, and it took you back to the 60s.
Totally. Yeah.
Because it was definitely a happening feeling.
Well, a lot of the events at 9 evenings took you back to the 60s, and Newton Harrison commented on that throughout the days he was there. Was, wow, this is real art.
Yeah.
This is like we used to do it way back when.
Yes, right.
And these kids are smart.
The MAP Radio Hour is funded in part by the Lift Your Voice Advocacy Fund. Production by Matthew Horton, theme song and logo by Otto Huditz. I'm Janelle Engelstad. Thanks for listening. And visit the Make Art with Purpose website to connect with us on Twitter, Facebook, and Instagram.